Welcome to another episode of York Hospital Ball. This week's guest is former goalkeeper Pete Jameson. Joining from Blyth Spartans in 2019, Pete quickly became a fan favourite and was the established number one across his three seasons at the club. Pete was Player of the Year in his final campaign, which culminated in promotion from the National League North. Hospital Ball is delighted to welcome Pete to discuss that time period in the club's history. The episode is once again sponsored by Tom Ibbett, a long-time York City fan who is also a lead volunteer at Westhorpe Scout Group. Westhorpe Scouts are a completely voluntary group who offer exciting opportunities to build skills for life for all young people aged between 4 and 18. They can be followed on Facebook, Instagram or X at WT Scouts, at WT Scouts, or contacted via email on join@WTScouts.co.uk. That's join@WTScouts.co.uk if you would like to register interest in joining the fun. But without further delay, here is episode 7 of series 11 with the wonderful Pete Jameson.
So Pete, thanks so much for speaking to us on Hospital Radio. We'll obviously discuss York City at length. But first of all, I'm always really intrigued by goalkeepers. And I always sort of wondered how people decide to become a goalkeeper, because it was a position that when I was playing football at school, I used to hate going in goal. It used to be like, oh no, please pick someone else. How did you become one? Were you ever an outfield player before? Would someone decide to put you in goal? What was the process?
So when I was younger at primary school, I used to play outfield, but then I was a season ticket holder for Sunderland and I used to go with my dad. And I always remember Tommy Sorensen. He was just, I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was because he was making saves or his kit was different or his gloves and boots. It just got my attention. And I just remember coming away just thinking I wanted to be a goalkeeper. I remember trying in the school, just my mum bought me some goalkeeper gloves and tried it out and just loved it. And ever since then, it's just stuck, and it's always something what I've wanted to be.
Yeah. It's funny that, because my second question was, I believe you're a Sunderland fan growing up. Was there a particular keeper you looked up to? So that answers that one. So that's really good. I mean, I think I'm right in saying that quite early on in your career, you helped train Middlesbrough's goalkeepers. How important was that in your sort of development?
So when I left school, I actually wanted to go in the army, so I was training for that, really. And my friend was at Middlesbrough at the time, and he was part of the youth team, and he's actually a goalkeeper as well. And I remember he gave me a call one day and said that our other goalkeeper's injured. Would you like to come in and just do a couple of weeks training with us, see if you enjoy it and see if you want to stay and do it with the youth team lads? So I just remember thinking, oh, but I would love to do that, you know, full-time training every day. So I actually went in for a week, and I was just basically, it was just to help out really with the youth team manager, which was Mark Proctor at the time. And he actually said, you're actually good at goalkeeper. Like, where have you been? Who do you play for? And I remember he gave me a contract to the end of the season. So I was just there basically with the youth team. But then the youth team used to help the reserves. And also I used to be able to join in with the first team keepers when they used to warm up before they would go with the first team training. So I just loved it, and it was amazing just to be given this opportunity by someone giving us a phone call, and it just worked out really well.
And who were the goalkeepers that Borough had at the time?
So it was Danny Coyne, Brad Jones, Jason Steele. Yeah, them three would have been the first team keepers.
And Jason Steele's playing in the Premier League, isn't he, with Brighton at the minute? So that's, you know, some person to learn off, isn't it? And I mean, your career breakthrough was sort of playing for Darlington, who were a reformed club, weren't they, making their way back up through the leagues. You had 4 years there, 119 appearances, two promotions. That must have been a real happy time for you in your career.
Yeah, definitely. That was obviously a big learning curve for me as well, going into men's football. But the team what we had was excellent. It was just full of grafters, northern lads who were just a bit rough, I'd say. We had this really good bond as a team. We never played football the prettiest. It was a bit long at times, but it was effective and it worked for us. And yeah, we had a couple of promotions there, which was amazing, especially for me, because they were like the first ones at a really young age, which is really good, really. So it was really enjoyable and definitely a big learning curve in my career.
Because I'd imagine that Darlington would have been like big favourites in those leagues to, you know, those divisions to get promoted. But did that sort of at times have its sort of own pressures on you as a team?
Yeah, definitely going into every game, because we were like the big fish in the pond, basically. So everyone wanted to get one over us. But at the time, Salford were coming through the leagues with us, and that's when Gary Neville and Class of 92 took over. So it was always between us two, and it started a rivalry between Darlington and Salford, which is nowhere near each other. Yeah. But this rivalry, it pushed both of us, really, which was probably pushed them to help them get promoted as well as it pushed us to get promoted. So we had some couple of great games against each other. But it was definitely Darlington were the biggest team in that league. So everyone wanted to get one over us.
Yeah. And you moved on to Blyth Spartans in 2017, which again looked like a real happy period of your career, you know, reaching the playoffs in your second season. I mean, it's a massive achievement for a club of that size, isn't it? And I don't think they've ever reached those heights again since.
Yeah, it was. Obviously, Blyth was part-time as well. Without being disrespectful, it's not a big club. A lovely, lovely club with lovely people there behind the scenes, and still people who I keep in touch with now. But yeah, they were definitely punching well above the weight in the league, where obviously yourselves, York were in, and there was a couple of more full-time teams in at that time. And to reach the playoffs was obviously a great achievement for the club. It was just a shame we got beat on by all in that first leg.
And sort of you mentioned there about part-time, and that was one of the questions I was going to ask you. With York being full-time in those leagues when they were down there, and you've experienced being part of a part-time team, what how tough is that being a part-time football? What was your job that you were doing back then, if you don't mind me asking, and kind of how did that affect you, say, if you had an away trip in midweek? What was the sort of protocol like to sort of get? Do you have to get time off work? Is it depend on players in your side, what jobs they've got as well?
Yeah, I mean, I worked for Sutherland Council at the time, so my hours were quite good, which was like 7:30 or 3:30. So for training or if it was a midweek game at home, everything was fine. I could still do it in the time frame. If it was an away game, say on a midweek, I would have to put like a half day holiday in, or maybe ask the manager if I could take unpaid leave early to go to these midweek games. But I always remember when I play a midweek game on a Tuesday night, and then you would come home at daft o'clock in the morning and you'd be up for work the next day. It was very tough. A few coffees were needed for that day. But I just always remember it. And I went into this bracket when I joined York playing against part-time teams. A lot of part-time teams don't have nothing to lose when they play a full-time team. The pressure just comes off straight away because there's no expectation to beat a full-time team. And then the pressure goes straight onto the full-time team to, you should be beating these. And I always remember it worked in my advantage and it worked against me as well. So I just remember at Blyth, we did have a very good team as well. So I remember that season when we did get the playoffs, I think we played York home and away in the league, and we won both games. But I remember the York, that was my first time obviously going to York as well, and just thinking, wow, like, I don't know why, but it's something there attracted me. And I know it sounds stupid because I went there later, but I just remember the first game at Bootham I played, I think we won 3-2. And I just remember coming away from the ground. I don't know if it was the fans leaving the stadium or just thinking, like, this is a proper club, this, and we've just won 3-2. Like, it was a bit bizarre for me, because all I've been used to was playing part-time teams and coming up through the Evo-Stick leagues.
Yeah, I remember that game. I think, did Robbie Dale get a couple of goals that match, possibly?
I think he won the penalty. I think Sean Reid scored, Adam Wrightson scored, and I think Greg Rutherford scored.
Maybe it was just he kept terrorising our defenders. Yeah. He was a good player, wasn't he, Robbie Dale? He was a live legend as well.
Yeah, it was so good. Like I said, like, we had a good team, and Robbie was, when he used to play against some fullbacks, I've seen him give him a couple of some fullbacks some bad times.
Yeah, and whilst you're at Blyth, think you played against York in a FA Trophy game, and you saved the Sean Newton penalty. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do. I've told Sean a couple of times about that when I played with him.
I can imagine. And you signed for York City that summer after the playoffs that we just mentioned there. But you had quite a big decision to make there, didn't you? Because I was looking back at some of the articles, and Alan Armstrong, who'd been your manager at Blyth, he'd then gone to Darlington and tried to take you back to Darlington with him. And I think he'd taken a few Blyth players as well. And I think the financial package probably would have been better for you rather than the full-time contract that York were offering, just because of your job and the wage at Darlington were going to give you. Was it the full-time kind of professional contract that York were offering? Was that what helped swing it? Or was it the, like you mentioned there, you'd played at Booth and Crescent and you wanted to be part of something there?
So when I left Middlesbrough, when I was just there as a training keeper, I just remember full-time football was what I wanted to be, professional footballer. So I worked, obviously, as a full-time job, but also playing the part-timer. And it was still always my ambition to be a professional footballer. And I just was wanting to get that opportunity. And I remember, obviously, after that Blyth, the last game, I remember Steve Watson come to our game against Altrincham. And there was a few of us. There was me, Kieran Green and Dan Maguire, who we contacted, who we wanted to take to York. And I always remember just thinking, oh, I wanted to do it straight away. I was over the moon that it was York. I could live at home still, and I could obviously commute every day down to York. So, and it was my opportunity to get a professional contract, which I wanted. So I remember Alan, who I've got nothing but good words to say about Alan, because he's such a lovely guy, top manager as well. And he wanted to bring the core of the group from Blyth down to Darlington with him. And I remember he would ring us every day saying, come on, come and meet us, come and sign. I had to say, obviously, I'm sorry, I wanted to go full time. It was my dream to go and be a professional footballer, so I couldn't turn down the opportunity.
Yeah, and you mentioned there Kieran Green and Dan Maguire obviously joined as well that summer. And I think I'm right in saying as well, you went to the same school as David Ferguson. So I imagine that must have helped you kind of settle in quite quickly, knowing that, you know, there was players that you played with before and people that you knew.
Definitely. It felt as if, like, there was other lads there, like Joe Tate, who I was with at Darlington, other lads who I played against, like the likes of Jake Wright, Jordan Burrows. So when I went into the team, it wasn't as if, like, I didn't know anybody. I hit it off straight away, so it was good for me personally.
Yeah, and the team got off to such a fantastic start, didn't they? I don't think we lost a game until mid-November, unbeaten in like 16 matches, beating Kings Lynn at home 3-0 as well, which was a tough game at the time, but winning, you know, by a comfortable scoreline. I'd imagine at that stage you must have been thinking this is a kind of dream come true. You've got your full-time contract, team are doing really well. You must have been pretty confident of promotion at that point.
Without a doubt, I knew with the team that we had like the better team in the league, really, that we should have won promotion. I knew that we were going to be challenging. I just couldn't imagine the start what we had, really. I think you said 16 games there unbeaten. It just felt like every game we went to, we were going to win. Confidence was that high. Obviously, the fans were with us. It was just an amazing time, really, especially for me, because this is my first taste of professional footballer. I just remember how I felt, that I was just loving it, and I was obviously just wanting it to continue.
And as a sort of defensive unit as well, obviously with yourself in goal and the back line, I think we were sort of playing three centre-backs at that time, including Steve McNulty. So what was it like having him playing in front of you? Because I imagine he's a bit of a character and different sort of player than you probably played with at Blyth.
Yeah, I mean, Steve's obviously had a great career. He's obviously, God knows how many Football League games he's played involved, and he was amazing to play behind because he was a great talker, a great leader. He was very calm. He wasn't erratic. So it was quite good playing behind him. And I obviously had Tatey and Newt, who's also good defenders as well. So them lads in front of me were brilliant. And it doesn't surprise me how many clean sheets we got that season. I always remember one of the first games playing behind Steve. Obviously, you won't mind me saying it, he didn't have legs at the best of times, but his legs were certainly going towards the end of his career. And just remember, a ball just got played over the top and it was about 30 yards away from my goal. It was never mine. I just remember Steve shouting, Pete, come and get it. So I'm running 30 yards and I just remember kicking it away, and he gave us a little laugh and a wink after, saying, you'll be doing that quite a lot this season. But just little things like that stick with me, and I'm sure when my football career is done, I'll look back, them little things will make me laugh.
Absolutely. And you mentioned before about playing at Boven Crescent as an away keeper. How was it playing now as a home keeper and in front of those supporters?
It was brilliant. Obviously, I experienced it with Blythe a few times, and it was amazing. Like I said, I think because of my background in football, not being used to it, and then obviously having that as my support was amazing. I used to love when it was the flip, and I would be up the top end, and then we would be shooting down toward the David Longhurst end. And when we used to be shooting down there, it was amazing because you could just see teams would crumble because the fans would get on them, and it used to work in our advantage, and it used to be amazing.
Yeah. I mean, the form dipped, didn't it, after Christmas? Kings Lynn improved as well, and then their form dipped, and then obviously COVID took place, meaning that the season went down to points per game. I mean, I'll ask you the same question that I've asked other people on the podcast before. Do you think we would have been promoted had it not been for COVID?
I 100% agree. We would have got promoted. I think, like you said, our form dipped after Christmas. I think we hit our rut. And then Kings Lynn, obviously, were picking up their points during that time. And then towards the end, when COVID come in, Kings Lynn had hit their rut. And we were obviously picking up. So the point, obviously, I know they had a couple of games in hand on us, but I definitely agree. I think we would have went above them.
Why do you think York's form did dip? Is that just a natural thing that you just can't keep performing at that level? And because I can't remember anything in particular that changed. You know, it wasn't like we were struck with a massive injury crisis or anything like that. It just seemed to sort of tail off, didn't it?
Yeah, I think it just happens in football from the top leagues down. Maybe pressure, maybe that teams during early in the season didn't respect us enough. It can be a few things. It can be coming into the winter time when the pitches are getting bad, fatigue's coming in. There's a few things what can happen in football where form does dip. You can't always maintain, unless you're Man City. Yeah. But it can't always maintain at a certain level all the time.
Yeah. I mean, we did have obviously that chance in the playoffs when it finally came round against Altrincham, which I think the team just didn't really turn up on the day. I don't think there can be any excuses about the game itself, but was it just sort of hard to prepare? I mean, obviously with COVID, it was really difficult for you guys to kind of prepare like you would do in a normal regular season. And how did you personally keep yourself sort of sharp during lockdown? And what was your kind of take on that time?
It was a stressful time because obviously I just remember like waiting by my phone every single day, just thinking, oh, what's going to happen? Nobody knew. And then obviously they weren't really going to do the playoffs. I think they were just going to do obviously just one promotion. And then obviously that's when the promote campaign come in and we got the playoffs back on, and obviously we had Altrincham in that next leg. So I just remember when it was the COVID lockdown, I was just making sure that I was keeping myself fit by going for runs and walking. But obviously it was difficult because as a goalkeeper you need your sharpness with the football really, and you can't really do that when you obviously working alone. And then I remember when we did go back towards training, we had a short time of where basically we're just cramming in fitness into the lads and myself to try and get prepared for this game. And I remember Altrincham played Chester in the first leg. And I just remember obviously thinking they were going to have that advantage against us coming into that game. So I'm not obviously going to say excuses. The better team won on the day. We didn't turn up. But I definitely remember coming away in that heartbreaking feeling after that game. It's one of my worst feelings in football I've ever had, that because I knew we shouldn't have been in that position. But obviously at that time it was just a heartbreaking and definitely a summer I wanted to forget about, really.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we'll come to the happy ending in a bit. But I mean, you must have been sick of playing Altrincham in the playoffs as well. I just realised you mentioned there before about Blythe losing out to them. You must have been sick of playing.
I know. They're like a bogey team, especially in the playoffs as well. So every time I play against them, even this season when I go back, it's bad memories for me.
Yeah. And just before we move on from that season, obviously York were really hoping that Dan Maguire was going to be that kind of final piece of a jigsaw and that goal scorer. But he really struggled to replicate his Blythe form, mainly through injuries. I mean, imagine as someone like yourself who played with him for years at Blythe and knew what he could do, that must have been quite frustrating, really, for you and for Dan himself.
Yeah, I mean, from knowing Dan as well, like I know how frustrated he was, even with himself, because he kept breaking down. Just remember him every day in the car. He wouldn't be his normal self. I think it was affecting him that he couldn't get on the pitch. And I felt really sorry for Dan. I think maybe he was similar to me, similar background of never playing full time and then coming straight into it at a similar age as myself. Maybe his body just couldn't adapt to it as what he maybe thought it could. And obviously, injuries in football is the worst. So I feel really sorry for Dan, because I think if we got Dan, what I know of him, could have definitely been that 30 goal striker for us.
Yeah, we wouldn't have even needed the points per game, would we, if that happened. You're in the non-league team of the year that season, having kept 15 clean sheets. Obviously, the disappointment of the Altrincham game, but this sort of personal accolades sort of mean much to you? Was that a bit of a consolation for you?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, because of the defeat in the playoff, that killed me. I remember it's my lowest point in football, so it was obviously nice to be in that team of the season. It obviously shown that I'd done something right that year, but obviously my mind was elsewhere. It was on the defeat in the playoffs.
And the 2020-21 season was predominantly played behind closed doors, wasn't it? As a keeper who's probably used to opposition crowd shouting stuff at you throughout the game, was that a welcome break not having that, or did you miss the atmosphere? What was it like as a footballer in playing behind closed doors?
It wasn't good. I didn't enjoy it. I missed it with the home fans and away fans. It wasn't the same. I noticed my form as well wasn't the best. I think that was partially to do because it just felt like a ghost town every time we play in the stadium. It felt strange. I couldn't adapt to it well. I think obviously probably the heartbreak from the playoffs previous season was affecting me in that season also. So I think there was a couple of things in that season which are just something what I don't look back on with fond memories. It wasn't a good time for me personally, and obviously the season ended in February. It was just a mess, really.
Yeah, it was, and I feel like as a supporter as well, it was just hard to get kind of almost motivated for it, because you just didn't think it was ever going to finish, and there was so many games getting called off, wasn't there? So even the games that York were playing, there was teams with like 8 games in hand and stuff like that. It was just never going to happen, was it? So there's probably not a lot more we can say about that season, but let's move on to the roller coaster of 2021-22 season. Obviously, new stadium for York City to move into. Unbelievable pre-season as well. I don't think I've ever, in my kind of 30 years of supporting York, known a pre-season like it. Played Sunderland and Middlesbrough, and you saved 2 penalties as well in that pre-season. I know it's only friendlies, but saving a penalty against Sunderland, was that something you were proud of, given it was your kind of team you supported?
Yeah, obviously it was really nice. I know there was no meaning to it with it just being a friendly, but it was nice, obviously, something to say I've done. Don't think my dad would have been too happy that I saved it, because he's a Sunderland fan also, but it was nice. And like you said, it was a great pre-season for us.
So great pre-season, absolutely horrendous start to the season, then quite inconsistent, which means that Steve Watson loses his job. How do you feel as players when a manager loses his job? And for you personally, you know, Steve brought you to the club. I know it's part and parcel at football, you know, managers kind of getting sacked, but how is it as players? How do you react when you sort of find out the news?
So that was my first manager who had been sacked while I've been involved in football. So for me, I remember ringing Steve and saying how sorry I was, because obviously I was part of the reason why I got sacked. Obviously, it's a team game, and obviously I have to hold accountability myself. But I just remember that feeling of, obviously, when he's been sacked, of just, obviously, it's somebody's job, you know, they've got a family, they've got kids, and it's not nice to hear anything like that. You don't wish that on anybody, really. But obviously, I understand in football, that is how football works, especially now I've got older and mature, that it is football, and it's not a personal thing. It's just life in football.
And John Askey came in. Results were still quite inconsistent to start with, certainly. We know how it ended, but when there was sort of results like 3-0 at home to losing to Bradford Park Avenue, same scoreline away to Alfreton, were you still confident as players of kind of getting in those playoffs and getting promoted? Being honest now, looking back, did you come off the pitch in some of those games and think, right, that's us done?
I'll probably say earlier on, when it was around about when John first come in, and towards the end of when Steve was leaving, that results were inconsistent. There was no really, we couldn't get any momentum with any results. We were having poor results, like you said, the Bradford one at home. So at that time, I would never have said, I would have expected us to be pushing towards the playoffs and obviously to say we got promoted. So I would never have thought at that moment, obviously that's what my aim is, but because of results being so inconsistent, obviously to be promoted, you need to be consistent.
What was it that turned the tide for you? Because I've spoke to Paddy, I've spoke to Clayton Donaldson as well, and they have different kind of things that they felt turned the tide for the team. And I wondered whether the FA Trophy run might be sort of high on your kind of agenda, because obviously you saved that penalty at Dagenham away and ran the full length of the pitch as well. I was watching it again last night to celebrate in front of the fans, which obviously must have been one of your best kind of feelings in football, I would imagine, to date. But was it that sort of run that kind of turned it a little bit and made you think, you know, maybe we can get this momentum? And because normally there is a team, isn't there, that does have that momentum that goes into the playoffs and they do end up getting promoted?
Yeah, I mean, I remember the Morpeth game when we played at home in the trophy and we were getting beat and then we pulled it back to, I think it was 3-2. I think Brownie scored. It was like last minute. And I always say last minutes are the best wins, because the whole place goes up, all the lads are buzzing. It's just a really good feel factor. And I remember after that game, I think we went on a little bit of a run where, I can't remember rightly, but I just remember we gained some momentum. And I remember going to the Dagenham game, and I think we played Darlington the week before where we won 3-1. And that was a good one because I felt like it was a bit of like a localist derby. So that was a good game as well for us. And then going into the Dagenham game, and then obviously couldn't write it for about 89 minutes. We weren't at our best. I think the Dagenham never really threatened us, but we never really threatened them. It never really looked like we were going to score. And then obviously we get the penalty later on and Clayton does his Panenka, which is unbelievable, especially at that moment in the game. And it just changed and the momentum just shifted into our favour. Just for my, I would probably say the Dagenham game was probably after that, when we're all in the change room and that feel-good feeling, I definitely think put us on that path towards the promotion.
Did Clayton ever try sort of Panenka's in training then? Was that something just instinctive from him? Because I think he did it a couple of times in the season, didn't he?
Yeah, I think with Clayton, it's just probably on the day of how he felt. So I wouldn't have been surprised if he smacked it into the top corner but because Clayton's just had a great career and he's obviously mentally strong, that he's obviously thought that the keeper's probably going to dive so late in the game, because as a goalkeeper, if you stand there, everyone will say, well, why did you stand? Why did you not try and dive? So he's probably known mentally that he's going to dive and I'm just going to penetrate him. And obviously it's just unbelievable from Clayton to do that.
And with that last Dagenham penalty that you saved, was it again sort of instinctive off the cuff that you ran the full length of the pitch, or had you always had it on your mind that, right, I'm going to go celebrate in front of the fans if I pull this save off?
So I always remember, I don't think many people know this, so the referee, when he was got the captains over for the penalties, he said that he wouldn't do the penalty shootout in at the York end. He would only do it at the Dagenham end, because I think when Clayton scored the Panenka, it was a bit between the Dagenham fans and the York fans that it's sort of like a little, it was nothing serious, but I think the referee was a bit worried in case we did it at the York end, in case it got a bit like feisty. So I always remember thinking, and we were like, well, no, you can't just say you're not doing that, like you've got to flip a coin to see who gets the right of the end. So I always remember thinking, well, if we win this, I'm going to run down that end and celebrate with our fans. So it was just in my mind that obviously, if I can save one and we win it, I'm sprinting down that towards the York fans to celebrate with them.
Yeah, and obviously Steve McNulty had got you to sprint 30 yards out your goal before, hadn't he? So you've had experience of sprinting that fast to get somewhere.
Yeah, thanks, Steve.
Yeah. When York did break into the playoffs, how important was it to get that first game against Chorley at home for the players? You know, because the away form had been a bit sketchy, I think, hadn't it, over the course of the whole season, really? And did you feel like at that point that the LNER Community Stadium had become a massive advantage if we could play it? Played a playoff game at home.
Definitely. I think everybody could say that after the final game where we won. I think that game maybe cemented us in the playoffs, but just not guaranteed on what position we would be in. But I think after that final game, I think we all knew that if we can get a home game here, it's going to be a good one. So, and obviously it worked in our favour where we drew at Telford and we knew that we'd get Chorley at home. I definitely think playing at the LNER, obviously with our fan base, it was huge, and it definitely helped us, and it was that 12th man what definitely got us over the line and into the next round.
Yeah, and the next round was at Brackley away, the semi-final. A real tough team. I mean, I don't know how many times York played Brackley over those years, and National League North, but I don't remember us winning many games against them. They are, for such a small team, the Army seems to have such a decent set of players, and I think we'd lost against them twice during the regular season as well. So it was a tough fast to go there and win, and again, you come up with the penalty save. Just interesting, we talked a lot there about penalty saves, Dagenham and the Sunderland pre-season, saving Sean Newton's earlier for Blythe as well. What was your technique for saving penalties? Were you trying to source video footage of players? Was it somewhat on the day that you kind of psychology of how a player would run up? What was your kind of technique for saving?
I remember that player, and he was taking free kicks, and his just technique was sort of cross, like whipping the ball. So obviously that's why I've dove to my right, thinking that, well, if that's his, the way he likes to kick the ball, it was going to my right. So I thought, obviously, that's the reason why I went that way. But other than that, as a goalkeeper, you're sort of looking at body language or watching footage of all penalties, what they've taken. But they all know, they know that goalkeepers look, so they always have to try and mix it up, or it's mind games like cat and mouse, really, where if they're going to go one way or go the other.
And were you someone who would sort of try to delay a penalty or anything like that? Or are you someone that would focus purely on those sort of mind games of how they're running up and that sort of thing?
Yeah, body language and how they run up. Maybe if they open the foot up at the last second, or they're trying to curl the foot around it, that's how well I would sort of go from it.
Yeah, well, it was an unbelievable save, and obviously such a significant moment in those playoffs, and a lovely moment at the end as well with Jack Ratcliffe, the York City super fan, who on your shoulders, and quite an iconic image, I think, of the season itself. And, you know, I think it kind of represented that kind of bond with the players and supporters. And for a long time beforehand, there wasn't really much of that. There was a bit of a discord. And I think kind of your relationship and your friendship with Jack kind of epitomised the kind of the way that had sort of rebuilt the club and the supporters together. What, just tell us about how your friendship with Jack came about and your relationship with him.
So I remember Jack and his mum, Ali, they always used to come to the home games, and they would always be waiting before the entrance at the LNER, and they would wait for all the players to come just from like out the car and walking in the entrance. And Jack was just always there, wind, rain or shine. He was always there, smiling, happy to see you, high fives. And as the season got on, just got to know him better, support him a bit more, and similar with all the other lads, like Ollie Dyson and Scotty Barrow. We just all took a shine to him. And I remember before the game at Brackley, I seen Jack, and I was speaking to him for about 5 minutes before the game, just asking how he was. And I remember when we were celebrating at the end, I seen Jack, and I don't know why, I just thought, oh, it's just the right occasion for him to come on the pitch and celebrate with us, because he's been there waiting for us all this time. Like, a special moment like this, he deserves to be involved with it.
Yeah, and I think his smile told such a story, didn't it? And you know, it's fantastic that you had that, you know, you've got that friendship with him. Did you feel a sort of momentum then was with York City after that game? You know, because like I say, we've not been great away from home. Brackley was a tough match, but to come through that and come through it well and then know that the final was going to be at home, that must have been a massive, massive boost for you as players.
Yeah, I think it was between Fylde and Boston, wasn't it? And I think if Fylde won, we would have been at Fylde for the final. So we're all wanting Boston to win so we could have the home advantage, even though Boston had did the double over us on the season and we did the double over Fylde. Though I always remember looking at the results on Sunday, waiting for Boston to, well, hoping for Boston to win. When they won, we knew that we had the home leg. And I knew then, it's strange, and people might say it's cocky or arrogant, but I just knew at that moment we were going to win that game. Especially being at home, I just knew it.
Did you ever get nervous for games? Because that was, I know you said there, you know, you almost expected us to win and were very, very confident. But it is a massive game, isn't it? And the LNER was full, and, you know, the atmosphere was electric as well, wasn't it, for that and the Chorley game. Did you ever kind of get butterflies before them, or was it just another game?
Yeah, I always get butterflies before every game. But then once the whistle goes, the butterflies just stop. I don't know what it is, but every game, but more so with it being the final, I definitely had more butterflies, because I always remember that the playoff heartbreak I had with York against Altrincham, and I always remember I just didn't want to go back to that feeling. I knew that I had to win that game.
And luckily we did. I mean, it's just, for me, it's such a relief to be out. I've obviously been in there sort of 5 seasons, and, you know, it was a massive. I don't actually think I enjoyed the game. When I look back, I sort of think I was so nervous about.
Yeah.
just us winning. Like, it didn't care. I didn't care about the performance or how we did it, whether it had come off someone's backside in the last minute, but we just had to win that game. And we won it pretty comfortably, really, looking back. And, you know, I think out of the three playoff games, that was probably the easiest one out of three for my money. What was your emotions like at the end of that game when that full-time whistle goes, or even when Mazkuyar gets the second goal, when you know it's so late on that there's no way they're coming back?
The relief. Honestly, even like sitting now, I've got like my hair sticking up on my arms, like the relief of that feeling of when Maz scored that goal. And that's why I ran down the pitch as well and celebrated with Maz, because I just remember just thinking, we've done it. I knew at that moment, that's it, the game's done. And I think everybody in the stadium could just feel that relief of thinking, finally, we're promoted, we've done it. So an unbelievable feeling, probably my best feeling to this day in football, and one that'll definitely live with me for the rest of my life.
And what were the celebrations like on the night? What did you do? Was it partying with the players? Was it what?
Yeah, I mean, obviously after the game, we've had a drink. Can't really remember much the next day. But a few sore heads there will have been. But I remember the next day we went to York Races as well, and the lads turned up there and we had a great day at the York Races drinking, and it was an amazing day. Just definitely just like a moment like that I'll always cherish and remember for the rest of my life, because days like that don't come around very often in football.
Absolutely. And, you know, you won Clubman of the Year as well, 19 clean sheets over the campaign. I think you got 60% of the votes as well. That must have been a real proud moment for you, because not many goalkeepers win the Billy Fenton Clubman of the Year award.
Yeah, amazing achievement. I think that my relationship with the supporters was all to know that I loved York. It was I just fell in love with the club, and I think I fell in love with the fans, and I think it replicated on both sides. It was just an amazing time for me and my family. And to obviously win that award, it was definitely something I'm very, very proud of.
And then obviously you had the really difficult decision about staying at York or leaving, which I'd imagine after the promotion, you know, your relationship with fans you mentioned there, we mentioned about Jack as well. It must have been a real difficult, challenging decision to decide to move on. And with that as well, I wondered how far in advance is that sort of thing happening? Did you have offers to sort of go to Harrogate or maybe other clubs before the playoff final? What, you know, obviously, you were coming towards the end of your contract. Were you waiting to see if we were promoted? Were you waiting to see what offers were on the table? What was the process with all of that?
So it was a bit frustrating on my behalf, because me and my agent did try and speak to the club. And this is not me to throw mud at anybody. And we did sort of say, look, I'm out of contract in the summer. Do you want to extend my contract? Or are you happy just running it out, my contract, and then I'm done at the end of the season? So we did go to the club. I think this was after January. And the feedback we got was to just say, right, we're just going to see what division we're in next season. And that was the feedback what we got. But that ran all the way to the end of the season. We got promoted, which in the meantime, I was playing well. My form was good. We got promoted. So there was offers on the table from other League Two teams, with Harrogate being one of them. So it was difficult, because there was sort of, there's part of me what thinks I could have probably had this sorted a while ago after January, and it's obviously got to this stage now where I got an opportunity to go into the Football League, which was always my ambition to go and achieve, to play in the Football League. So it's very difficult and frustration, and I think that's why it made my decision so hard.
Yeah, and I guess your age at that point as well, you might think, well, will this opportunity to play in the Football League come around again?
Yeah, definitely. I've turned 30 years old now, and it's very rare that a keeper my age will probably get an opportunity like this. And also, it meant that I didn't have to relocate my family and myself to another city, with it being Harrogate, because it was something I could do similar to York, commuting every day. So I didn't have to move away from home. But also, the decision itself was not an easy decision to make. It sounds cheesy, but it was the decision I know I made, and I was crying, because I knew how much I loved York and I didn't want to leave, but I knew that this opportunity wouldn't come around again.
Did they try to give you like a counter offer once we did know what division we were going to be in, or by that point was it too late? Had you given your word to Harrogate?
By this point it was too late, because it literally, the talks were as soon as the playoff final was done, And also, at the time, I think a lot of other players were in a similar boat. At York, who were out of contract also, that the likes of like Akil Wright, who'll have been in a similar situation with myself, where he's obviously performing really well and he got interest there as well. So, like I said, very, very frustrating, but also it sort of did make my mind up a little bit with that, regarding that I hadn't had the contract offer.
Yeah, I was looking back at your debut for Harrogate Town. You won 3-0 against Swindon Town, and I know you didn't save the penalty, but the penalty that Swindon got kind of rebounded and came to you. But yeah, that must have been a proud moment in your career. You know, you kind of almost vindicated there, right? You played a game in the Football League and kept a clean sheet, helped keep a penalty out as well, and so that must have been a good feeling playing in that match.
Definitely, it was EFL debut, which is something what I've always wanted to do, to say, oh, I've played in the Football League. It's definitely something I'll always be proud of, and definitely something I'll look back on with good memories. It was perfect for me, keeping a clean sheet on my debut as well, so I couldn't have got any better.
And you kept a clean sheet against Crawley a few weeks later, and I read somewhere that you ended up on a drip after the match because it was such a hot day. Is that right?
Yeah, so it was, I can't remember the temperature itself, but I remember playing in the game, and we finished the game, it's 0-0, and I remember getting in the changing room and just feeling lightheaded. So the ambulances had come into the dressing room and do the ECG stuff with me. I remember then going home, just feeling so unwell. And I found out that I've had sunstroke, had to go to hospital. I'm so dehydrated, my body, and I've had to go on the drip. So it was a crazy time, really, just off playing the football match. And I think because you would think it would happen more with an outfielder with them running around. Yeah, but yeah, I think because I've just been stood there in the sun and just getting pelted by it all game, so it's called sunstroke.
Yeah, and you got a long sleeve top on, I imagine, as well, haven't you? Being a goalkeeper. Harrogate, you played quite a few games, didn't you, last season, and lost your place in the team. This season you moved on to Hartlepool, which looked like a great move for you, kind of reunited with John Askey. I guess at your age as well, you're so used to playing and being number one, aren't you? I imagine that when you're not in the team at Harrogate, you kind of needed to move, didn't you, for your own career. You've worked that hard to get to that level, but you didn't want to get to that level and not play.
Yeah, I think when I come out the team at Harrogate, I remember speaking with Simon Weaver, and he said, you've done nothing wrong. He said, what I'm doing is I'm freshening things up. I'm bringing in the other goalkeeper who had experience of playing in the AFL. We were currently in a relegation battle. We were sitting outside the relegation places. So he said he wanted to freshen things up and bring experience in. And so it was no bad blood or anything. But for me personally, I think it was because I've been so used to playing all my career to then, right, you're going to have to sit on the bench now. It was a bit of a shock to the system. But on the flip side, it wasn't that I was spitting my dummy out or anything like that. It was, I respected the manager's decision. But also what I was noticing was John Askey got the Hartlepool job, and towards the end of the season, there was contact made about possibly going there next season if I wasn't playing at Harrogate.
Much closer to home for you as well, isn't it? Sunderland to Hartlepool.
Yeah, and that was another factor of it was nice for me to finally be closer to the northeast, where I'm not commuting every day, which I've done for the past 4 seasons with 3 at York and 1 at Harrogate.
I know you didn't play in the game, but how was it coming back to LNER recently and seeing all the old? It must have been quite surreal, kind of being in the away dressing room and kind of being an opposition player.
It was a really strange feeling. It was nice, but also strange. To see all the people again was amazing. You know, people who I think so much of, and people behind the scenes who I hadn't seen for years. So it was so nice to go back and see all them people. The game itself, it was strange for me because obviously I'm sitting there on the bench and I'm so used to playing in that stadium, and to be on the wayside of it, it was so different. I think John even himself admitted that it was a strange feeling for him as well, that it just seemed like he wanted to get the game over, if that makes sense. And that's how I felt also. It was something I wasn't looking forward to, without being rude or disrespectful. It was just because I knew it was just going to be so strange for myself.
Yeah, there was some rumours in the summer about you returning to York. Was that ever on the cards, or was that just kind of social media?
So I spoke to Mikey. Obviously, there was a position where Harrogate would allow me to go on loan, and I think Mikey had David Stockdale and probably wanted the permanent rather than the loan signing.
Yeah. And any regrets moving to Harrogate, leaving York? Because I would have thought you would have been number one again for the following season, or is that like you said, was it kind of taken out of your hands really with the contract offer?
So when I spoke to Simon Weaver about being offered to go to Hartlepool on loan, he didn't want me to go. He wanted me to stay with the other goalkeeper and fight it out. And Harrogate's a lovely club. It's a lovely family club. You know, I've got nothing good words to say about the club. I think for me personally, definitely to go and play in the Football League was something what I wanted to do. So I can't look back and think, oh, did I make the wrong decision there? Even though I would have loved to have been at York, but I think for me personally, it was the right time in my career to go and play at the Football League and achieve that.
And what's your ambitions kind of now going forward? I know John's recently lost his job. I think by the time this podcast comes out and we edit it, it'll probably be after the time that York play at Hartlepool. So hopefully you haven't sprinted from one end and celebrated in front of York fans.
Oh, never.
But what's your kind of ambitions left? Because, you know, goalkeepers can go on for a lot longer, can't they, than outfield players, and goalkeepers can often get better with age as well. Are you looking to kind of keep playing at the highest level you can for a number of years yet to come?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm in a position at the moment where I'm not playing at the moment at Hartlepool. I have had a spell in the team, but as it's aware that the team isn't doing well, especially defensively. We can't stop conceding goals. So my main aim now is just keep working hard and training hard, and I'm just fighting and desperate to get back in the team. And make sure if I do get back in the team, grab that chance with both hands and try and earn a contract with Hartlepool. But going forward for my future is to play football as long as I can. I love football. It's my life. And obviously, if I can stay full-time, great. I know it's difficult in the area where I live that there's not many full-time teams. So if I can stay in full-time football, it would be amazing for as long as I could, because it's always been my dream to be a professional footballer. So it's definitely my aim and still ambitious to keep there.
Well, thanks so much for your time, Pete. It's been great to go over those memories, and particularly with it, like I say, having a happy ending for York City getting promoted. And, you know, I'm sure you'll always get a good reception at the LNER Community Stadium. And, you know, I wish you all the best, apart from the 27th if you play against York.
Oh, no problem, mate. And thanks very much for your time also. It's been amazing to go back and speak about these memories. Like I said, I've got goosebumps as well just speaking about it. And definitely memories what I'll always cherish.
Top man. So when I was putting this series together and had this idea of doing it everything through the decades, I was a little bit concerned as we were getting closer to the modern day, just because players that belong to other clubs, players that are currently playing, sometimes find it a bit harder to be open and honest. So to get Pete on was a little bit of a stab in the dark, really. I didn't really expect it to come off. But like I said in the outro of the last interview, you know, literally got the thumbs up from Pete, and then within a day we'd recorded it. So he couldn't have been more helpful in the process of kind of putting the interview together. So massive thank you to him for doing that. And obviously I knew Pete was a great goalkeeper for York City, but researching it again and going back over some of those games, you kind of forget how much of a massive impact he actually had during his time at the club. And you know, it was great to have him on the podcast, and wish him all the best in the rest of his career. Yeah, and thank you again, people kind of getting in touch after the last few interviews, Ashley Chambers and Michael Rankin, saying how much they enjoyed it. Really appreciate people leaving positive comments and leaving donations to York Hospital Radio. justgiving.com/YorkHospitalRadio is the website link if you want to donate anything. Like I keep saying, I know it sounds like a broken record, but reviews are really, really helpful. So if you've got 2 minutes to just drop one onto iTunes, that'll be great. Or give us a rating on Spotify. I think we're up to like 54 5-star reviews on Spotify, which is great. They all kind of help with these algorithms and getting it out there and getting it well known. So yeah, keep spreading the word. And one more episode to come of this series, which will be Manny Duku, so covering literally as close as I could get to this season. And then hopefully we'll have the live event that we did over a month ago now, but hopefully we'll be able to edit that and put that out as well for people to enjoy. So yeah, thanks for listening again, and yeah, next week's will be the last of the current series. Hope you still enjoying it.